Did you know that you can rate podcasts on Spotify now? I'm going to assume you didn't know, because there's actually no way for me to hear your response. Once you pull up our show on Spotify, you can simply tap on the rating button and give us a rating. That's actually the best way that you can support our show. If you fancy Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or however you get your podcast fix, I want to encourage you to rate our show and write us a quick review. By giving us a rating, it helps our show get discovered in this giant sea of podcasts. And if you really, 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 really want to support our show, go to realasianpodcast.com/support.
As an imported Asian adoptee or hyphenated Asian, are you looking for stories and people that you can relate to? If yes, then check out The Universal Asian. The Universal Asian is an open platform run in the magazine style with written articles, poetry, prose, photos, art, and videos on a variety of topics. No topic is off limits. They host online events that showcase what members of our Universal Asian community are doing or provide support through how-tos or discussions on topics of interest. Visit and subscribe at theuniversalasian.com or follow them on your preferred social media platform. Join the Universal Asian community today.
Hey, listener, want to tell you about this new and exciting app we're on. It's called Shuffle. Shuffle allows you, the listener, to not just listen to our episodes, but also allows you to edit and snip audio clips, add visual elements, react, even share in your socials of specific moments of each episode. One of the reasons why I love Shuffle is that it's focused on the community aspect for podcast lovers. Because, you know, sometimes listening to an episode can feel a little bit lonely. Let's say you're working near a colleague or commuting on public transportation and you've got your AirPods on and you hear something funny or interesting from your podcast and you're smiling and you're giggling by yourself. All of a sudden, you start getting strange looks from everyone. The person next to you gets up and sits somewhere else, and now everyone on the train thinks you're crazy. Well, guess what? You're no longer alone, because with the Shuffle app, you can react and enjoy those moments with other listeners. We have a new community chat out there for all you fans who love AAPI cinema. You can chat with other fans, ask us questions, get film recommendations, or even recommend us films. Right now, we have a special offer for you. Shuffle is offering to sponsor 10 of our fans their first month on our Patreon. All you have to do is download the Shuffle app, join the Real Asian Podcast community chat, sign up for our Patreon, and we'll take care of the rest. We'll select 10 random people to sponsor their first month. That's right. We're so confident you'll enjoy the app and our content that we'll take care of the first month. So to join the community today, go to realasianpodcast.com/shuffle. Again, super easy to remember, realasianpodcast.com/shuffle. And welcome, folks, to a nice holiday edition of Real Asian Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Liu, and I'm joined today with Renee, Allen, and Baldwin. What's up, y'all?
What's up?
Hey, I'm so glad to be back in the studio.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, y'all.
Feliz Navidad.
Okay, so what did we all get for Christmas?
Oh, I got a GoPro Hero 9 and an Oculus Quest 2.
Wow. Nice. Nice.
All I got that. And you know how I got it? My Wells Fargo credit card points.
Oh,
so, totally nice. Free.
Oh. Gift to yourself.
Are you, did you just get money from Wells Fargo by saying that? Or did you, are we shooting a commercial right now?
It's a plug.
That's
there.
Right.
Alan, what'd you get for Christmas?
I got a bunch of stuff, but my favorite thing is the Peak Design carbon fiber tripod, which weighs like 2 pounds. That's great for bringing into the wilderness, so on and so forth. So great.
That's nice.
So funny you said that, because I just got my Peak Design phone cover.
Cover?
Yeah, phone. They have like this whole system for where like, so it's like a magnetic back. And so like I have like a wallet and you can actually just like quickly like attach it to like a car mount, whatever, all this other stuff. And I ordered it back in like September and it was delayed like 4 months basically. So I just got it.
Again, are we doing a Peak Design commercial here?
Damn, holy shit.
Baldwin, anything special?
I actually haven't even opened my presents yet, guys.
Wow, you're waiting. Okay, you're waiting. Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm waiting.
It is Christmas Day. I got a year subscription to Quibi.
Nice.
Yeah. Quibi, yep. Nice.
I'm excited to use that. I heard Quibi is a real hit.
That's right.
Because it's a holiday episode, the movie that we're going to be doing is Love Hard On. I mean, Love Hard. Before we get started with the discussion of our episode today, I'm going to go over through the synopsis just to kind of walk through the movie here. So Love Hard introduces us to Natalie Bauer, played by Nina Dobrev, an online columnist for Soch Media, clever name.
Soch.
Nice. Soch. So Soch. Who writes about her bad dating experiences under the pen name Always a Bridesmaid. While complaining about the lack of suitable partners in LA, her friend and coworker Carrie tells Natalie she needs to expand her dating radius on her dating app Flirt Alert, which looks pretty much like Tinder.
Wow.
Probably didn't get the naming rights from Tinder, that's why. After doing so, Natalie matches with Josh, played by Jimmy O. Yang, but / Darren Barnett.
Beautiful man.
From Lake Placid, New York. Natalie is struck by Josh's good looks and interests stated on his profile. The relationship begins over Natalie's disagreement when Josh's profile says Love Actually is the best Christmas movie ever. Mm-hmm. Because Natalie believes Die Hard is the best Christmas movie ever. We'll have a discussion about that later. Their online relationship continues to grow to where Natalie is falling in love with Josh. The next day, Josh casually texts Natalie that he wishes she could be with him for Christmas. Impulsively, Natalie plans to fly all the way to Lake Placid to meet the man of her dreams and surprise him. But before she leaves, Natalie's boss, Lee, thinks this match could turn into one of the greatest terrible date stories for her column, so he gives her his blessings. Once
what
Natalie,
a terrible boss.
Once Natalie, I also like the scene where he's on the bike. It's pretty funny. Once Natalie arrives to Josh's house, she's greeted by his stepmom, played by Rebecca Stab, Josh's dad, played by the amazing James Saito, love him,
yes,
and Grandma June, played by Althea Kay, all of which are happy to see Josh dating such an attractive woman. Josh is soon called over, and Natalie is shocked to see the real Josh is not the same man displayed on his profile. Natalie storms out of the house, taking baby Jesus with her to a local bar. Suddenly, the man in Josh's profile shows up, whose real name is Tag, and this is Darren Barnett. Natalie musters up the courage by taking shots and attempts a sexy karaoke performance. Natalie's face, though, swells up like a pumpkin because the shots she took were actually made with kiwi, which she is extremely allergic to. Once she realizes...
They made sure to drop that like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, just to make sure.
Real hard.
Kiwi, allergic, got it. Once she realizes how she looks, she abruptly leaves the bar and passes out, face first into the snow. Natalie wakes up in a veterinary hospital where Josh has taken her. After the two have an argument over who's ultimately at fault here for the current bad dating situation, they reach a deal to where Josh will set up Natalie up with Tag if she continues to be his pretend girlfriend to his family until Christmas. Josh advises Natalie on how to connect with Tag, stating how he loves Thoreau, outdoorsy things, and eating red meat, all of which Natalie struggles to really get into. During their pretend relationship, Josh and Natalie learn a lot about each other, such as Josh's candle-making hobby, in hopes of turning it into a legit business. Also, by the way, we learned recently, there's an actual word for a candle maker. It's called a chandler.
Chandler?
Chandler? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's a chandler. Yeah, I could be wrong. Owen, Josh's attention-seeking brother, and his wife, Chelsea, meet Natalie for the first time, and Owen is played by Harry Shum Jr. Josh explains to Natalie about how his brother needs to be the center of attention in his family. However, Natalie insists to Josh to never let Owen overshadow him again. During a night of Christmas caroling, where Owen is the star, Josh takes her earlier advice and proposes to Natalie in front of his family. Natalie begrudgingly says yes to avoid embarrassment, but now has to live up this fake engagement. One night during a family gathering where Natalie is missing, a suspicious Owen drives through town to see Natalie on a date with Tag at his family-owned restaurant, Abbott's Steakhouse. At the end of her date, Natalie begins to realize how incompatible she is with Tag. The next day, Josh, Natalie, and Grandma June go to a retirement home to explain online dating to old people and how to set up a profile. We learn, at this point, of Josh's reasons of setting up his fake profile in the first place, saying how it's all started with him exaggerating just to cover up his insecurities, but eventually losing control to where he ultimately lost his real self. Grandma June leads them to a surprise engagement party at Abbott's Steakhouse. Lee is there and talks to Owen, where he learns how Natalie originally came to Lake Placid for a story. As the situation is coming to a head and realizing that there's no escape, Natalie confesses the whole truth in front of everyone and leaves the party. Josh is heartbroken, thinking Natalie has left for LA. He's consoled by his father after admitting he wants to leave the family business and start his candle-making business, to which Bob is okay with. Lee finds Natalie confronting her about always fleeing at the first sign of trouble on a bad date, but asks her why she didn't immediately leave when she found out who Josh really is. Natalie finally realizes how much she loves Josh and confesses her love a la Love Actually style, where it's in front of his house with the cardboard signs, yada, yada, you know, all that scene. Very controversial scene. Then they bone right there in front of his family. No, I'm just kidding. They kiss and they live happily ever after. So we'll go straight into our segment, our Love It and Leave It segment, the segment where we say one thing that we loved about the movie and one thing that we'd typically leave. Alan, what is your Love It and Leave It?
My Love It is that Asian men are shown as diverse and they're not inherently bad characters. So for example, Jimmy Yang's character is, the stereotypical whatever, but he's not a flawed person. Tag is kind of a douchebag. But he's not a bad person. He's just really into himself. And then
I'd beat him to myself too.
I mean, if I was that good looking, I'd beat him to myself as well. You know, and then
myself deep.
And then Josh's older brother. I mean, like, he's not a bad person as well. Like, obviously, he's really into himself, but there's some good in his heart. So, like, it shows that we're not, a monolith. We're different people. We can be weird. We can be great. We can be normal. Whatever. So I love that about it.
Okay, what's your leave it?
My issues with the film, I mean, everything about, well, the premise. The premise. I mean, like, the way to prove that he was
not, it was a good movie, except that it wasn't.
It exactly. It was like, good male Asian representation. I hated everything else.
It's just, okay, so here's my gripe with it, right? So, like, in order for her to validate that he was real, she's like, oh, take a picture, whatever. I was like, why don't you just fucking FaceTime him? Like, yeah. Zoom the guy. Like, what the fuck? Like, that could virtually eliminate any ambiguity within this whole situation. So anyway, that was my whole thing.
Okay, but okay, have you ever watched the TV show Catfish?
Yeah.
There are so many opportunities to be able to actually do that in real life, and there's always a reason. Like, oh, I'm sick, or
yeah,
that's why you don't go to Lake Placid.
All right, Renee, what's your love it and leave it?
My love it is there's a lot of really great Jimmy O Yang moments. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. I just really appreciate him being able to not have to use his fake goofy Chinese accent that he did in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And because he got to be an actual full, well-rounded character, not like some weird caricature in like Crazy Rich Asians. I really appreciated being able to see him shine. Mm-hmm. If you guys haven't had a chance to, definitely check out his comedy special on Amazon as well.
Hilarious.
He's hilarious, just downright great. And so I'm really glad he got to be a protagonist. My leave it is white women are at it again.
When are they not?
I definitely I'm glad that they chose Vampire Diaries.
That's where she's from.
Right. For those who grew up on the CW, you recognize who she is. I did not actually watch Vampire Diaries, but I knew where she was from. And, it was really great to kind of see her kind of come back into kind of the spotlight. But also the fact that, she definitely embodies all the wrong things that white women do. To try to
LA, just, like, too.
I know, right? Oh my God. Just like check every single box. And, so she played the caricature of that character exactly. For the storyline, did she need to be a white woman? Yeah, she did. I'm sure you could have put any other, you could put an Asian woman in there too, I'm sure, but it just wouldn't have the same oomph if it wasn't played by a white woman. So yeah.
Mm. Okay, Baldwin.
My love it actually is, I like how they didn't try to capitalize or tokenize the
Asian aspect of the movie. Like, for the most part, Josh's family was portrayed as normal, red-blooded Americans. You know, they didn't try to add too many Asian elements to it, just to add it, you know, like as a gratuitous element to it. Because, you know, sometimes that could be a little bit overdone and it's just distasteful.
Yeah.
In my leave it. So I just don't like how Natalie's character, like she pretends to like the same thing Ted does in order to win him over.
Tag.
Like,
isn't that Tag.
What, Tag. What did I say?
Ted. You said Ted.
Like Ted Lasso.
he could be a Ted.
There you go.
Sure.
He could be a Ted. but yeah, it's like, that's what high schoolers do, right? You pretend to like something that the boy likes.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, 50% of the things I'm into now is because of my past relationships.
Exactly. You know, as adults, I think it's okay to not like the same things, and you can like get over that. So I wasn't really a big fan of that part.
You know, though, when I was watching the film, I was actually thinking about real world relationships of people I know, or myself, and you know, the traveling half across the country just to be able to meet someone you maybe do really like. I definitely have done that. So that was realistic to me, but also the fact that a full grown-ass woman was still faking it to try to get the attention of some guy. Like, yeah, I have a couple of friends who are like that. They basically are chameleons and change who they are, right? So I feel
we all do it
to a degree.
Yeah, it's cliche, it's whatever, but also at the same time, like, I know real life people who do that, who get married not being who they are. And it's like, how the fuck do you reconcile that, you know? But, you know?
I guess I'm just a hopeless romantic. So my love... My love it and leave it. So what I loved about the movie, it's a modernized twist to the classic Cyrano de Bergerac love triangle story. You could say catfishing is bad. And let's face it, catfishing has been around for years, right? The classic story with Cyrano de Bergerac is that you have one person who is not the conventional physically good looking, but very articulate and, you know, has like amazing attributes. Right. And he falls in love, and there's a love interest, and then there's another guy who's like, who is very physically attractive, but not very like well spoken and not articulate. So they work together to basically pursue and fall in love, have the girl fall in love with this fake version or this idealized version of this person. And so it's a kind of twist to that effect. And we also did an episode on The Half of It. Go check it out now. Still a good movie. I actually just watched that recently.
Yes.
I look at it like this. Sure, we never want to be lied to, but let's have some compassion for those who feel they do need to put up a facade in the first place, because we all have insecurities and we all exaggerate in some form of fashion. Social media, our resumes, this podcast, we all do it, right?
What? whoa. Speak for yourself.
I'm 100 all the time. As cheesy and illogical it is, I enjoyed the intended message of it. I think it does takes it to an extreme, but that is what rom-coms do.
Right, exactly.
But what I took out of it is basically sometimes it takes a little bit of catfishing to find true love. I'm just kidding. But in seriousness, I think I just enjoyed a classic rom-com movie. My leave it. So honestly, I wasn't too fond of Harry Shum Jr.'s role in this movie. I like Harry Shum Jr. and he's great. Glee fan all the way.
Yes,
yep.
I just didn't like him as this obnoxious and somewhat heel character. But here's the thing: like, I know that the movie, the writers probably needed a heel character to flip the whole situation on its head, right? A wild card to kind of be that that player, that role. It was kind of forced, so I just didn't think it was that well done.
Well, I think the reason why it seems very obnoxious and kind of like in your face, out of like really far-fetched, is because he's so used to being the center of attention all the fucking time. And then the moment he's not, he's like, well, I gotta overcompensate in order for me to get the attention back. Like the whole singing at the hospital, or hospital. Old people does not equal hospital. Sorry. at the home. And like, you know, once the attention was off on him because they sang Baby, It's Cold Outside, he's like, he's not used to being second place. And so he's like,
But see, that's my point, though. The only explanation we get to why he's the center of attention is that he's a Pisces. It's like, okay, That's his. Okay. That's your explanation.
Okay, so what are you then, Ray? Where are you?
With Harry Shum Jr.?
No, like Zodiac.
I'm a Taurus.
Baldwin?
I'm an Aries represent.
Aries? Oh, okay, that fire.
Fire.
Alan?
I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, and I'm a Cancer. So, you know, none of us are Pisces here.
My sister's a Pisces.
Oh, okay.
I don't see Sally as the center of attention. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you may see things differently. You're her brother, but...
Well, if you could only see Alan's face right now. Yeah.
No, not... She used... I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe when we were younger, but not anymore now.
Yeah.
She is very loud, though.
I mean, I just felt like it was heavy-handed. That's the thing. I don't deny his character needing to be there. It was just a, hey, you know, he kind of just came out of nowhere.
I think what was really interesting about the way they played it was that they made him this person who was like super narcissistic and all about him. Mm-hmm. But then when he did the reconnaissance of going to, right, he didn't use any of that against her.
Yeah.
He just like held on to it. And it's like, that doesn't, that goes counter to what I was thinking they were writing him as.
It was inconsistent, right? It was like, why does he care all of a sudden about his brother?
I just feel like if they really were going to make him do like this reconnaissance and go and find all this information, and then for him to not do anything with that information, that absolutely was like, that was a missed opportunity.
But then the movie will be like 3 hours long.
No, it was, yeah, we need a tight 90, you guys.
Tight 90. Rom-com threshold, 90 minutes.
Yes.
In the movie, there's a particular scene that I know one of us is probably reacted to, was like, yes. Oh, so there's a scene, a rock climbing scene. My first thought went to, I wonder what Alan thinks of this. So Alan, could you break down the rock climbing scene?
First of all, do you even climb, bro? Like, that's really what I have to say. Okay, so first of all, in the movie, Tag identifies himself as a fucking person who does rescues in California. Hence, he's part of SAR, which is basically search and rescue. Hence, climbs in Yosemite. Hence, he should know how to climb. But this fucking idiot, you can't teach a fucking survival course and not know the basic points of climbing. So let's break it down scene by scene by scene. Okay, first of all, who the fuck says aggro? I know that was like Nina's character, but like, who the fuck said? And like, if I was him, I'm like, I would just be like, you don't climb. Like,
you don't climb. That's a red flag. You don't climb, bro.
This is like one of my Tinder dates when like I met a girl. She's like, oh, like, you know, I love to hike. And she showed up. She's like, oh, Ray? I was like, it's REI, you idiot.
Yeah. Anyways, oh, no.
Anyway, so this is very technical here, but let's start off with like when they got to the gym, right? So when they got to the gym, I get the purpose of the scene, but his side of the rope is clipped onto the quick draws. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make any sense. And I think the reason why they did it in the movie is because they want to not have Darren like swing back or like kind of hanging in the head in the space in the stratosphere as like trying to film.
Also a little too close when they were climbing together.
A little too close, right? That would have been a red flag for me. But then like the reason why that's not correct is because even if he was like, clearly he's top roping. If he's top roping, you don't need to fucking clip your rope into the quick draw, at least like three of them above. Like if you're just clipped in because you're trying to like avoid swinging away, yes. But he has three draws above him, clipped above him. So I was like, where are you climbing? Because you're going to get in the way of the quick draws, you idiot. You can't be search and rescue. On top of that, he's climbing like a 5'8", 5'9". So why is he like, honestly, like, I think the producer of this movie should have just hired a fucking Gumby from the gym, because he would have better explained how to do climbing correctly than just not knowing what to do. So, on top of that, like, I don't care about how Natalie climbs, because she's clearly a beginner, but, like, if I was Tag and I saw her climb, I would have been like, you said you climb mountains, you said you climb, like, I would have been like, you're struggling on a 5'8", you don't climb.
You don't climb, bro.
You don't climb, bro.
But, okay, I'm assuming it was an auto belay, because both Josh and Natalie...
There is no auto belay. There's a person who's... There's a specific scene when she gets to the top of the plateau, and then they zoom down, her rope goes to the anchor and goes down to the guy. If you look at the scene, it's the guy to the far right. So there's clearly a person in the back like doing the belaying for him.
Same with Josh, because when Josh is...
Same like, with Josh as well.
He's
running
up. Okay.
And there's a lot of inconsistencies in the scene because they're shooting it multiple times. But like, you know, when you tie like a figure eight on the gyms, they have you do a stop or not.
Yeah.
So they had that and then they did it. They had it and then they did it. And the more inconsistent thing is that like fucking Josh's character tied in using a beaner like that was hooked on a figure eight and then he clipped in. But then when he gets to the top, he's tied in figure eight through the belay loop. So I'm like, what the fuck is going, like, what is this? And then on top of that, like the worst thing that really annoyed me, and I'll get off my soapbox after this, is that, like, oh, Josh, he clips it on his carabiner. He's like, you can learn a thing or two, tag, and he starts fucking climbing. But the motherfucker is rainbowing off different fucking holds. And then, like, you hear someone go, yeah, Josh, you got it. Get it. And I would have been like, bro, you're not climbing. What the fuck are you doing? You're not doing this correctly. You're like, I would have been like, stop. You're at least do it correct. And then and the last thing, sorry. When he pushes
one more
her
thing,
off.
One more thing.
When he pushes her off and she lands there and then tags like, whoa, did you just jump from there? That would not be the right response. The right response would be looking at the belayer and be like, what the fuck are you doing? You could have killed that person, you fucking idiot.
She would have actually crashed and hurt herself.
She would have, yeah. So anyways, I'm off my soapbox.
I love it. I love the passion, Alan.
Did you even climb, bro?
Sent it. Oh,
it was so bad.
So I looked up the, I did a little bit of research, and it actually turns out Jimmy O Yang says it's actually quite the opposite in reality. He's deathly afraid of heights, and Nina is known as like a daredevil. So Jimmy had to act like he was very confident, but the whole time he was doing that scene, he was terrified.
Oh. I'm sure he was like 5 feet from the edge at all times.
Yeah. And Nina had to act like she was scared when she was probably, you know. I also, because before they were at the rock climbing gym, when Josh was showing her on the wall in the store, and I was looking at Nina's arms, I was like, okay, Nina, she's got some forearms, right?
So
she knows what she's doing, but she's just acting like she doesn't know what she's doing. Also, I did like the little quote in that scene that I jotted down. It says, great things are done by a series of small things brought together.
Yes.
Isn't that deep?
I also read that on the back, like on the wall, there was a sign that said that too. And it's by, I think, Vincent Van Gogh said that.
Mm. And if you think about it in the movie, it's basically what that is that there's a series of small things brought together and it turns into this like whole big thing, right?
The other tidbit, insight too, is the movie titled Love Hard is a combination of Love Actually and Die Hard.
Yes.
Right? Yep. Look at all these nuggets you guys are dropping.
Knowledge.
Also, Asian parent being supportive of his business, of his entrepreneurship. That was nice.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
Now, is the mom, Mommy Lin,
yeah,
is she the original mom?
No, he says the stepmom.
Stepmom,
okay.
What about like for Owen's character, though, the brother? Like, he treats her like, do you guys notice that? He treats her like that's his actual like mother.
He probably just like embraces her as the mom better than Jimmy's character. Yeah.
I was wondering if it had to do something along the lines of the, like, what happened to the mom? Did she die of cancer or something, or just like left the family? I don't know what the background is, but you know, I was wondering if any of that had anything to do with like the family dynamic of like why each brother was different and how they treated their parents and each other, you know?
See, that would have been good. I would have liked that a little deep, you know, delve into that.
Tight 90, Ray. It got to be a tight 90.
But that tight 90, I don't know they can fit that in a rom-com.
I know. They're like, too serious.
Deleted scenes. Yeah. The extended cut.
Yeah, extended cut. Love Hard 2.
We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Hey friends, for those that really know that I love picnics. But not just any picnic, I'm talking all out, fancy, make other picnics around, jealous kind of picnics. However, it does take a lot of time and effort to put these picnics together, and for some reason, none of my friends ever want to help out. Gosh, that's why I go to Experiences by K. Experiences by K is a Bay Area luxury picnic business that can be set up just about anywhere from the beach, park, your backyard, and more. Simply go to the website, book your picnic, show up, and enjoy good times with your friends, worry-free. Great for birthdays, anniversaries, proposals, you name it. Go to experiencesbyk.com right now for your upcoming occasion, and check out Experiences by K on Instagram at Experiences by K.
Annie's Tea Cakes is an Oakland-based food company on a mission to provide plant-based Chinese food options to the world. Wow! As a longtime plant-based eater, Annie started this business to create a way for herself and others to enjoy the foods that are often shared with family but don't fit a plant-based diet. You know, this journey started with vegan Taiwanese pineapple cakes. That sounds amazing, I'll tell you that right now. Follow Annie's Tea Cakes on Instagram or go to annietcakes.com to place your order today.
And now, back to the show. Okay, now I want us to talk about the spicier part of the episode. I'm going to call this the In the Headlines segment. I'm not sure if that'll stick, but you know, we'll see. I'm going to use an IG post from a very popular account and an article written about this movie as kind of a jumping off point. So in the IG post, right, it asks, does Love Hard promote harmful Asian stereotypes? Where they bring up the history of how Asian males in cinema were often portrayed as emasculated and desexualized characters, and points out how Josh is pandering to a white woman and becomes more attractive to Natalie when she learns more about him. But the user says that personality-wise, because he's not confident and he's emasculated, those are the stereotypical characteristics of Asian male characters in cinema. In fact, one user commented, "Oof, big yikes. I figured it was number one because people won't stop talking about how bad it is. But you're the first person I've seen call out the Asian stereotyping." They're referring to the poster. "Wasn't planning on watching it because bad Xmas movies aren't my thing, but definitely not about that. Such a shame too, because Jimmy O Yang is great. Would love to see him get a shot at a better romantic lead." With the article, and there were other articles that I read that similarly said the same thing, but this one is the one I'm pulling excerpts from. One part of the article says, "For all the conversations about diversity and better representation, this Christmas movie leans into the harmful stereotypes Western societies have about East Asian men and Asian men in general. The weird, nerdy, and desperate non-white man on the internet who virtually connects with pretty white women." Another part of it says, "Upon looking at his face, Natalie's colleague points out that he's Asian American as if Natalie had found a gem, or even something exotic. It's a jarring detail because the comment sets the underlying tone of the movie. There are Asian American men who are desirable to white women, and then there are Asian American men who are not." Now, I'm going to ask y'all for your thoughts. Does Love Hard promote harmful stereotypes?
All right, I'll go.
All right, Baldwin, you're up first.
Represent all Asian men.
Representation Olympics, I'll go first.
Yeah.
For real.
So I do think that there are some harmful stereotypes portrayed in the movie, but the thing is, Love Hard does a pretty good job at mitigating them. Like, there's a stereotype of the geeky, unattractive male, Asian male, and that's a central part at the beginning of the movie. So if you were to stop there, I think you'd be right. But the thing is, like, if you watch the rest of the movie, there's just so much more to it. I feel like Josh's character, he doesn't act like the stereotypical geeky, like, meek Asian as, like, the movie goes farther along. Like, he's funny, he's confident, he's sweet. Yeah. And then you're also, like, introduced to other Asian males that are different. Like, his brother Owen, who's played by Harry Shum, and then he's super confident. And then his dad, who's married to a white woman, and he owns an outdoor sporting goods store. And then even Tag, who's...
Darren Barnett, yeah.
Yeah, Tag. Like, he's... I didn't realize he was Asian until, like, I looked it up. But he's Asian, right?
That's funny because they actually say that at the very beginning when she shows her friend. Yeah, he's like, oh, he's
Asian.
Yeah,
she specifically said he's Asian.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that was uncalled for, though? Because that was one of the things about it, too. It's like, oh, did you really need to make a comment of him being Asian American?
I have a lot of thoughts.
I'm like, is
that.
He not Asian American?
Yeah, I mean, like, why wouldn't you? Like, he's Asian American.
I will say I am the only person here not with another Asian partner, right? Like, everyone else here has an Asian partner. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see it that way. Like, we're like, oh, he's Asian. You know, it's like, okay, so that's like the equivalent of someone saying to me, oh, he's white. And it's like, my husband is neither yellow fever and I am not after that white whatever bread.
White bread. You love that white
Wonder Bread.
I know, right? So I didn't see it like that when she said, "Ooh, he's Asian." Like there's some sort of tokenization,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. Yeah, I mean, I feel like even though there are stereotypes that are introduced in the movie does a good job of, like, not letting that, you know, overpower the entire story. Like, all of these Asian men are attractive in their own way, and in the end, it's not like Josh had to change anything about himself. He didn't have to do like a dramatic makeover, like take off his glasses, get a haircut, or like go to the gym or anything.
Yeah, he still looks the same.
And then he still, and he still got the girl in the end. So I guess like when you look at the movie as a whole, I guess I have to think to myself, like, how could they have done this differently without ditching the whole premise of the movie? Like, what could they have done? Like, not have an Asian character? Like, I don't know how it would work.
I really like what you just said, Baldwin, though, about how, like, he got to be a nuanced character, right? He was witty and charming and funny. So it wasn't playing to your, you know, 16 candles kind of stereotyping of, right, like, Asian, where there's just one dimension and that's who they are, just goofy, nerdy, right? And loveless, right? Unfuckable. And that wasn't the case.
I just really think that these people are projecting so much. Okay, so in the movie, it's never stated that Jimmy, like, she doesn't outright say that Jimmy's ugly.
Yeah.
He's just not
she just
the person.
He got catfished.
Like, yeah, so, exactly. Yes, that's why she would be upset. But these fucking boba liberals, they're just like, oh, well, clearly, I don't think Jimmy's good looking. Therefore, they're trying to say that Jimmy's ugly in the movie. It's like, no, the dude clearly just fucking lied. That's why she's upset. And it turns out that intrinsically, like, she likes him for him. And while the fact that, like, you know, Jimmy Yang's character doesn't fit conventional attractiveness, we have to realize that these people are also projecting their own conventional attractiveness onto this movie. Like, they have to at some point realize that they can't, I get it, like, Asian people, we need to stick together. But the reality is that Asian women, I'm going to be honest with you, sisters, you can't speak on some of our Asian male issues. And I know that this is terrible to say, but like, we face our own issues and Asian women face our own issues too. We're going to be supportive of each other and we can try to empathize with each other, but we can never truly understand, because like, the reality is that Asian men are desexualized in Hollywood. And like, this movie is not meant to show that Jimmy Yang's is just ugly. He's always going to be ugly and reinforcing a stereotype. It's just that Jimmy Yang is just used Photoshop to just lie about who he was, but right, intrinsically he's what she wants. And I think that at the end of the day, like, it's a fucking Christmas movie, a rom-com that's meant to be lighthearted. And if they're so upset about it, then why don't they go watch this, or why don't they go watch Last Christmas? Because Henry Golding is a fucking beautiful man. So, like, did they talk about those movies? Do they watch these things?
I thought,
like,
this was better than Last Christmas,
though. I thought this was better than Last Christmas because the plot was just funnier, even though the climbing thing. But I just think, like, these boba liberals, like, they need to realize that not everything has to be an outrage. Things could be nuanced. There's different ways to look at the movie. And not everything has to trigger you for the sake of triggering you.
Yes. In summary, it's not that deep.
It doesn't have to be. It's like Renee, when you asked at that film festival, oh, is there a reason you went digital instead of medium format? It's like, no, it's just a little bit easier.
Right, yeah, exactly. It was what was available. I'm like, oh shit.
Oh,
<I'm> yeah,
like, got it.
Yeah, Alan, I actually got that same feeling too as I was doing research on how, you know, people are sort of projecting their feelings onto this movie.
Yes.
And I actually think the reason is as Asians, when we see a stereotypically geeky Asian male or female and they're cast in like a unflattering, unattractive role, I think we're subconsciously just programmed to notice these associations and call them out. Right. And I feel like that disregards the rest of the work done in the movie. Like we said before, his humor or his intelligence, his sweet and soft side, and then him overcoming and like standing up to his brother, like those are all great moments in the movie that counteract these negative stereotypical tropes.
So I call reaching. I think it's not promoting harmful stereotypes. And I want to be very, clear. It's not harmful. I mean, it's like, yes, it's not like denying the fact that Hollywood has had a bad track record of desexualizing Asian men. We recognize that and we acknowledge that. But I want to like break it down line by line. In this article, it says, it's a jarring detail because the comment that Natalie makes about Tag/Josh being Asian American sets the underlying tone of the movie. There are Asian American men who are desirable to white women, and there are Asian American men who are not. And I was like, yeah, that's true. Like, that does not mean inherently they're racist. It's just that there are some women who are attracted to Asian American men and some who are not. That is true of every single race. And every particular person. Now, statistically speaking, sure, there's reasons for that, but that doesn't deny the fact that there are some you are just attracted to a certain race or not. And the fact that this article points out that the weird, nerdy, desperate, non-white man, whatever, on the internet, it's like, who says Josh's character is weird, nerdy, and desperate? Like, right. I don't recall Natalie, you know, projecting or saying that. I'm again, she's just a beat a dead horse with a stick. I don't know why that phrase is a thing, too, by the way. Why would you beat a dead horse with a stick? But I'm sorry, but this is conjecture. Like, if you recall, Josh's problem is that he did not present his real profile in a flattering manner, right? He says that he only matched with 3 women in a year, but he says nothing about him wanting to match with a white woman. Plus, Josh is into rock climbing. So obviously, he already goes against like the typical nerdy Asian weird stereotype that what they're trying to say. And here's my other thing about it. These types of discussions and articles and comments and, you know, this flack that always comes up with these kinds of movies, I feel it disqualifies actors like Jimmy taking the opportunity to fill these roles. Like, as he stated in one of the articles, the role was not written specifically for an Asian American. Yes, he happens to be Asian American. It did not have a specific race in mind. Now, does that mean that he has the absolute duty to present a nuanced, like a specific Asian American type of character and represent the culture? I don't think so, if the role doesn't call for that. But the opportunity presented itself. Yet, when you have articles like this and discussions like this, I feel like it discourages actors wanting to take on this role because of that self-inflicted burden that we always carry, right? If it's an Asian male lead, they have to always feel like, oh, I am leading. I have to represent a very nuanced character. And I think that's just unfair to Jimmy. And when these people say things like this, it's like, that's what you're doing. You're discouraging other young actors to say, well, I don't want to take on these roles because I might not truly feel like I represent Asian America.
And that's one of the things is like, do you think other white male have that same dilemma movies? No, they don't.
Like Seth Rogen in the fucking movie, what was it? Knocked Up. Oh, was it Seth Rogen? I apologize.
Up. Yeah.
Like, people weren't writing articles like, he's clearly an ugly white man knocking up a beautiful white woman. This is impossible. It's like...
That's always a rom-com trope.
It's a rom-com trope.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the guy that you wouldn't think that would get the hot girl gets the hot girl at the end.
Right.
I mean, we've all been there. You know, I've been a shy guy.
I gotta say, Raymond, I gotta really give you props on that. The whole takeaway about the whole, like, it discourages people who, let's just say, look like Jimmy Yang from playing these roles and then owning the roles themselves. Because like if Jimmy Yang, if he were like a brand new actor, right, and he took on this movie and then like have like thousands of boba liberals like, oh, like he's really ugly, like this is bad stereotyping and so on and so forth, how are you as an actor supposed to take that? Like,
yeah,
here you are,
like I worked on this project.
I worked on this project. I wanted to show who I was, and I'm not portraying any stereotype. I look this way. Are you trying to imply that you're projecting your own insecurities of Asian men onto me when I'm trying to, one, get a fucking job and make a living, but then two, like, this is reality. It's upsetting to me.
So I wanted to go ahead and bring up one of, you know, Jimmy O Vang's, cast members from Silicon Valley, Kumail Nanjiani. Yeah. And, you know, he came out with a movie that was actually based off of his life, The Big Sick. And there were a lot of people who were really upset about it because it's like, oh, why is it perpetuating the stereotype that the Asian person has to be with the white woman? Like that kind of thing to show, like, or something along those lines. And it was just like, because people were coding Kumail as being like unconventionally, like not conventionally handsome. But
now he is like, damn, he's ripped.
Oh yeah, my God, he's ripped.
Eternally ripped.
But what's funny is that, you know, and so his wife, seeing the criticisms about it, was like, he's attractive to me. So what the fuck are you guys saying? Right. So like that kind of goes to what you guys are saying. It was just like, you know, just because they're not, you know, coded to be conventionally attractive to you doesn't mean they're not attractive to other people.
Exactly.
Right? So yeah.
And I understand the sentiment in terms of wanting to push for progress and fair representation. Great. And I'm all for that. But honestly, sometimes I'm always asking, like, what the F is the goal here? Like, are you just writing this article? Are you just saying these things because it's the cool thing to say? And like,
it's a hot take.
It's people a hot take,
get, right? You just want to get read.
It's easy to tear down these movies like that because Hollywood's a big target and they don't have a great track record, but we're not looking at it in a very particular view. So I think that's my issue with that. So let's go through, let's end the the episode here with some speed round takes.
Let's go.
We're going to go quick round table, yes or no, and your quick reasoning, okay? Number one, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Yes.
Renee.
I was like, where's my buzzer? I need to hit it. Exactly. The answer is yes. And anyone who says otherwise is incorrect. It happens during Christmas. It is a Christmas movie. Merry Christmas.
Okay. Okay, Baldwin.
Well, I'm going to expose myself here, but I haven't actually, I don't think I've ever seen Die Hard unless I was like really young.
Oh my God.
I've seen actually the I've seen like the modern sequels of it, but I haven't seen the
Bruce
Willis. I can't remember seeing the original, but I've never thought of it as a Christmas movie. So I would be no. I don't know if I'm valid or not.
What about you, Alan?
No, it's not a Christmas movie. I've watched it multiple times. It is not a Christmas movie.
So, I'm sorry, Renee. I'm going to have to go with the not camp. Just because this movie is set on Christmas does not make it a Christmas movie. A true red and green Christmas movie needs to be about Christmas all the way through.
I'm sorry. Okay. But Independence Day, you think that is a movie about 4th of July? It has fucking aliens in it.
It is titled Independence Day.
Every year I look up in the sky and I see Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum flying in the sky, okay? So yes, Independence Day is a documentary, okay?
It's a documentary.
It's a docuseries.
And the title is clearly stated Independence Day. Die Hard is not Die Hard Christmas Tree.
In September. No. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Should the original Baby, It's Cold Outside be canceled?
No.
Oh my God. This is not a lightning round take. There has to be some more nuance, right? I mean, okay, so like the background behind it for some people who don't know, it became popularized back in 1949 as a song in the romantic comedy.
She came with receipts.
I know, right? Came with receipts.
We got the receipts.
Right. And so, yes, at the time, you know, it was written in a way that when some of the words are seen as more innocent, such as what's in my dream,
playful, and yeah,
it's not at that time, and not just at that time, for a really long time, doesn't mean like, oh, did you drug me? That's a more recent thing. It was more along the lines of like, oh, you know, I guess a playful, what's in this drink? It's going straight to my head kind of feel, yeah, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and really, what I want to go ahead and note is this this Medium article that this person wrote. The problem with Baby, It's Cold Outside isn't about consent. It's about slut shaming. This person really wants to be able to kind of stay, but she's really worried about what her mom, her dad, her aunts, her sisters will think about her staying a night over at a guy's house, right? My take on it is, I don't think it necessarily should be canceled, right? It belongs in the pantheon of Christmas songs, but also at the same time, it's about the context. And really, really, when you're divorcing it, it's about slut shaming and being able to own your own sexual liberation.
That's good.
Baldwin?
Yeah, I don't think it should be canceled either. And I agree with Renee. I think, you know, it was written during a time where staying over at someone's house would be considered scandalous. And I think in this context, the assumption is that she actually might want to stay over at his house, but she just doesn't want to, you know, seem scandalous. And I think because of the past transgressions over the last few years with the Me Too movement and, you know, Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, those cases, it's much more heavily scrutinized. So when you look at it from that perspective, I feel like I could let it off the hook. I do think that nowadays, it would be a little bit distasteful to sing it just because of all those recent thoughts and feelings around it sounding a little bit rapey. So maybe if we just keep it in archives for a little bit and then bring it back again once this all blows over.
Just mumble the lyrics. Just
or in this case, you know, retrofit it to be acceptable,
right?
Like they did in a movie.
Okay, Alan.
Yeah, no, I don't think it should be canceled. Very similar to what Renee and Baldwin said. I have the same opinion. People just take language that was done way back when and then just adjust it, or they just try to fit into their narrative. So for example, like a lot of old time songs, they use the word gay because at the time it was just meant to say happy. Are they going to be like, this song is canceled because they're clearly attacking LGBTQ? It's like, oh, it's just saying it's gay old time, it's happy, that's what language meant. Fucking hell.
I think we're all in agreement here. I don't think it should be canceled. But here's the thing. I'll take it even further. I still enjoy the song. And I I should not be made feel bad about it. I enjoy Christmas music. I listen to it. And
no,
I'm like,
Christmas shaming here.
I don't. No Christmas shaming here. Yeah. All right. All right. Don't tell me how to listen to my Christmas music.
No burning down Christmas trees here.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're Fox News.
Unless you're Fox News.
You can burn that shit down all you want.
Attack on Christianity.
Okay. And then last thing, can you be in a happy relationship if you were catfished in the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. Alan says yes. Baldwin?
I would say no.
What level of catfishing?
Let's say you were Natalie in this case.
Oh.
I don't know if you would ever fly across the country, but let's say you did.
Okay,
and then I have.
Okay. So,
let's say you did that, and then that person was like, not him at all.
So not necessarily that. I would say I didn't care. I don't care for the fact that he did look not correct to what my expectation is, but that's always the case. Like, I definitely have accidentally mistaken someone because there was a group photo and I couldn't tell which one I was actually talking to. So then, you know, it had to be one of the two in the photo. So, okay, that's good enough for me. Mm. So maybe the catfishing was on me because I couldn't detect which of the two they were.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to say it's possible. And the only reason why it didn't work out was because their personality sucked after a while. So,
gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah,
the personality is the whole thing. Alan, you said yes, right?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah, but it depends on the level of catfishing, though. Like, if you show up and there's like you expect the woman is like a dude, then it's like, I don't know if that's going to work out. So it all depends. It all depends.
Gotcha. Okay. I thought about this.
Is the perpetrator raised like, I have, and I think it works.
I've been catfished, but the catfishing part actually didn't really bother me as much as the person smelled. The smell was what really...
They smelled like a fish.
It was literally a catfish. Yeah, it was literally a catfish when I, you know, went to there was like a flopping catfish and I was like, ah, oh, shit. The damn catfish.
Yeah,
well, that's going to conclude our episode here. Again, Merry Christmas to everyone. Christmas.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart.
Oh, we're like really off there, but let's sink it in the post-production and make sure
it's in post-production.
It better, yeah, exactly. You better have auto-tune.
I'll put some auto-tune too. So, yeah. Tune in next time for another episode of Real Asian Podcast.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yo, if you're listening to this episode and haven't subscribed to our podcast yet, what are you waiting for? Hit the subscribe or follow button if you want to get the latest and greatest from us, and we'll make sure to keep bringing you the hottest takes.